Welcome to the Classy Ring Attire Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's time to get classy.
Let's do it. And, you know, right to start off the show, we've got the big news of the week. Just announced since the last time that we recorded this podcast, the big news, obviously, Dale Earnhardt Jr. has announced his retirement from NASCAR. Wait, sorry, wrong podcast. That's not even a
See, when you do that, I have to immediately panic, like, all right, what's the stupidest news that came out this week?
Well, I wanted
and
to
usually
really...
Del Rio did something, so I know what it's going to be.
He did, I think. Another drunken...
He canceled something.
He got sick or something.
He got sick and he canceled
that
something.
That guy cancels more than anything. But no, I figured I'd really throw, like, you know, something out of left field this time. So, there you go. You're welcome.
Yeah. So, like, that's why I was sitting there and I was like, I can't, what? Because I couldn't think of what, like, real dumb had happened in wrestling.
Also, Del Rio doing something dumb doesn't even make our fake big news anymore. Like, it's that common.
All right. This week, Payback happened.
Yeah.
You watched Payback?
I did.
How did you feel about Payback?
Okay, so to put it in context, I had been traveling this weekend, and I wasn't able to watch any of it until I got back. So I watched Payback on Monday after I had driven 8 hours. It was the certain exhaustive haze I was in. That House of Horrors match was stupid.
We'll get to the House of Horrors match.
That's really, like, the biggest takeaway. Like, there were some points in Payback where I'm not sure if it actually did happen or I was just hallucinating or...
I really enjoyed Payback.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously Kevin Owens and Jericho did
right.
You know,
it kind of had... Not to say, like, it was as good as an NXT TakeOver. But it had that thing the last two takeovers had where it's like abysmal build-up.
Right.
But like
the actual
show that came to play.
Like the card didn't really look like much on paper, but it still managed to deliver.
And they did nothing to convince me that the card looks like anything on paper.
Right. You're absolutely right.
But I want to honestly, like, there's a lot, I think, to talk about with Payback.
Okay.
So it opened up with, I think it opened up with Jericho.
Jericho and a KO, yeah.
Jericho and KO. Big surprise.
Big surprise is Jericho won. And, you know, and it got us all thinking, like, oh, okay, well, maybe he'll do like a short run on SmackDown. Turns out it was really short. I mean, and again, we don't know exactly, because they've swerved us plenty of times over the course of this storyline.
Right.
So, for all we know, Jericho could show up. And, I mean, Fozzy's song is one of the main songs for NXT Chicago, which is also the same weekend as the SmackDown pay-per-view, so...
And it's the kind of thing where I saw a lot of, like, the crying of, oh, that's so stupid, he's just gonna lose it next week, what a stupid booking. But...
Yeah.
Honestly, like, the fact that it caught me off guard. I think everybody was predicting a Kevin Owens retaining here.
Sure.
Also, there was a tap out to the Walls of Jericho.
Which never...
In 2017.
Which doesn't seem to happen all that often anymore.
Yeah.
I do think Kevin Owens was supposed to have tapped with his good hand.
Yeah.
Because you saw him, like, immediately switch, you know. Just minor thing. And I mean, really, the only reason why I noticed it was because the camera was fixated on him the moment he switched hands.
Right.
To tap. It was, I enjoyed the match a lot.
Enjoyed
it
a lot.
It swerved me, you know.
Like, oh, yeah.
From two aspects. Because, A, you know, we expected this to be the match where Kevin Owens finally sends Jericho off to tour with Fozzy. And, B, my went blank there. The Walls of Jericho actually tapping out.
But I will say, assuming that this is, and with SmackDown ending with, you know, Jericho being destroyed by Kevin Owens, that's a pretty nice, like, oh, he's sent off for injury, not banned reasons.
Well, sure, and
kayfabe thing
that typically is the way that Jericho likes to
go out.
Exit.
Yeah.
Believe that's how he left whenever, like, his last big extended run was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he was after the feud with Shawn Michaels, that, like, that time frame.
Right.
And then there's other times where he was like, you know, you're fired or you're banned from blah, 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 you know.
But this, assuming this is the end, which I think most people assume at this point, mm-hmm. of this particular run,
mm-hmm.
I gotta say, this has been, and I know we've said it before, this has been a hands down fantastic
yeah.
Chris Jericho run.
Especially considering how it started.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. And especially, yeah, with all the struggles for the first 6 months of it, basically.
Yeah.
To still be able to look at the whole encompassing thing and be like, one of the top ones. Especially since he's had this, like, not part-time status, but, like, stop-and-go, come-and-go status
yeah.
kind of thing. It's been his best one of those.
Yeah.
It's rivaled his, like, full-time yeah, material, no, a lot of it.
It's definitely up
both
there with some of
on
his
mic,
best
character work.
Work, yeah.
And it's been incredible, and it was a really good send-off because it had a really good match at Payback, and then an yeah. arguably better match to close out SmackDown.
Yep.
And the fact that he closed out SmackDown with a title match
mm-hmm.
Really kind of, I mean, and he held the title for 48 hours.
Yeah.
But, like, it... Not that he did a lot to, like, make the title feel important, but, like, just his attention to it along with Kevin Owens' attention to it over this past little bit
mm-hmm.
has really made that title feel important.
Right.
It's helped that the Universal title has disappeared. Nobody's allowed to talk about it.
Right. And the WWE champion didn't have the championship at Payback.
Right. And it's in a, you know... shenanigans finders keepers kind of situation.
It's been returned unless Shane is pulling some shenanigans himself.
Right, but at the time,
right.
I mean, the US title was a big deal and they treated it like a big deal.
Yeah.
So I want to say for this week, you know, both shows, it's been a fantastic kind of send-off, 1-2 punch send-off
for that
Jericho.
For them.
Then Austin Aries and Neville. Aries wins by disqualification.
Yeah.
Honestly,
like, that was an interesting way to get out of that match. In a DQ kind of way that you normally don't see all that often.
Right.
Like, yeah, you get ref interference or ref, you know, accidental bumps or whatever. But just to get, like, full on pull the ref, you know. Pull the ref over like that. It's pretty interesting, and I enjoyed it. I mean, I'm assuming that means that they're going to continue this feud,
which
I'm fine with.
I'm fine with in the fact that these two guys are fantastic and they work fantastically
yes.
together. As you want to continue to develop 205 Live into a viable third or fourth, I guess, brand
yeah.
extension, then I need to see other people.
I feel like they needed to be a little bit more.
Well, these are their big guys. These are ones that
yeah. I'm with you. I'm 100% okay with them being front and center. But at the same time, because this has been a little bit of an extended feud now, during that time they needed. I feel like they need to be a little bit more economical with the time that they've got. Because while they're over here. You need to be developing somebody or a few people that are, you know, waiting in the wings, and I don't really feel like they've done that.
Right. No, these... If I, average Joe, just watcher of Raw, these are the two guys I'm most likely to know and care about.
Is average Joe related to Smojo?
theoretically, Brian Kendrick. The Brian Kendrick might be another one that I'm like, oh, I know who that guy is.
Sure. And he's at that level where he could probably, you know, go in and out of the main event scene of 205 Live.
And I mean, under normal circumstances, I would say use your triple threats and your fatal four-way sparingly.
Right.
But, you know, this might be the kind of thing that, yeah. like...
I'm and speaking of, I'm kind of ready for Tozawa to do something else. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm ready for him to kind of put the Kendrick thing... behind him now.
Yeah.
Because he was the guy that I felt like was supposed to be the next one, and he probably still is, but I feel like he needs one more feud to kind of get him a little bit more momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he's gone as far as they can probably go with this whole lessons thing with Kendrick.
Well, I think you have a guy like, I think TJ Perkins is a really good example of, he was hotshot out of the gate. He
yep.
won the tournament, first holder of the title. He was the one showing up as the champion of this new brand
mm-hmm.
on Raw. But the second that championship was taken off of him, he's kind of, he's fallen.
He's just
way down.
He's just a one-dimensional character that makes video game references.
Well, and
as far as whenever he was a face.
Right, but he's struggling to stay relevant.
Yeah.
Among these bigger players, I guess.
Sure.
And so that's the kind of thing. It's like, I think he's a talented dude. I think he's
sure.
young, and I do think that there is plenty of room to grow. But I don't.
And that's why I'm glad that they're changing him up now, making him more of a heel persona. And I feel like that's working way better for him right now.
Right. But like, he'll always have that, the first ever cruiserweight
champ. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, because we'll ignore the previous cruiserweight champions, but he's the first ever of this cruiserweight.
I mean, he was the first cruiserweight champion since Hornswoggle.
Yes.
So there's that.
Which is why...
That's a massive hook to hang your hat on.
I mean, you could also say he was the winner of the initial
Cruiserweight
Classic.
Yeah.
If you want to, you know, figure out how to make his accomplishment sound good.
Yeah, you're right.
But he is one that there's no reason why he shouldn't be in a fairly constant rotation around that title.
Yeah.
Other than... And part of it is those purple segments, man. They're just, the crowd's not into them.
I don't know. They're leaning into the wrong things, you know.
So,
I wasn't feeling. I love Jack Gallagher, but I'm not feeling him handing out umbrellas to his partners.
So there's a video, that's going around online right now. That's for Payback, as Neville's coming out, they're still putting the ring together.
Yeah.
And it is a video to show the efficiency and the well-oiled machineness of WWE backstage, of the crew.
Yeah.
And it's a genuinely impressive thing to watch. I do encourage you go out and find that
yeah.
because you're watching which camera angles are selected, so you're not seeing this.
Right.
But like, they are putting that purple tape on the ropes,
yep.
you know, with Neville being just inches away from him.
Yeah.
So that's a really cool thing to watch, but it also really strikes me as, oh.
It seems unnecessary, you know?
And I get the purple. I get the branding.
Right.
Marketing-wise, I get the red,
yeah.
blue, purple, yellow. I get you brand your shows like that. But it's like, oh, so there's like a 3-4-5 minute segment before every cruiserweight thing where they have to stop the show and put the...
Yep.
Clearly, they're trying to cut that down as much as possible.
Sure.
Which is why Neville's coming out with the ring half done.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, that... I'm not going to say that's the sole reason why these cruiserweight segments can't get over, but that can't help.
Yeah.
Like, that just has to, like, kind of stall the crowd out enthusiasm-wise.
And just another point that I'm not thrilled about is the weird talking lead-in segments that air on SmackDown, when it's literally just like, I'm so-and-so, I'm on 205 Live, watch this next hour and watch me do blah, 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 blah to so-and-so-and-so. And just them standing backstage next to a monitor, and it's just like,
right.
it feels very flat.
I don't have a perfect solution, because
right.
there's issues like 205 Live has never had the hot crowd
no.
because they just watched 2 hours of SmackDown.
Right.
And then it's, here's a bunch of guys you care
yeah.
less about.
And the only time it's come close is if they're in a, you know, big market, smart town, you
mm-hmm.
know? That's really the only time any of the guys on 205 Live are over, and which is a sad state because a lot of them deserve it, you know?
Well, and I would love to see an episode of 205 Live, I guess.
Sure.
But, like, I can't say that I wouldn't be ending SmackDown at 10 o'clock going, I do have work on Wednesday, something I'm very aware of.
But I'll stay an extra hour, you know.
So, but at that point, it's not, I'm excited to see
yeah.
205 Live. It's, this better be worth it.
Maybe they started off with a hotter match rather than, you know, another tag team match with just like X faced cruiserweights versus X heel cruiserweights that you get like every episode.
Yeah. Maybe.
But then again, that's like your episodes of Raw and SmackDown. Just here's your randomly like puzzle piece together tag team.
Yeah.
You know?
Next up we have Hardy Boys facing off Cesaro and Sheamus.
With the big news being the heel turn at the end of the match.
Also, Jeff Hardy lost a tooth.
Also, like, I saw the spot and I saw the replay and it was brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, it was not the way it was supposed to have happened. But man, Sheamus should make that part of his arsenal. And of course, he was a pretty clean loss. Like, not a whole lot of blood or anything.
Interesting that they're going heel. I feel like this is the first time. I feel like this is the first time I'm organically cheering for Sheamus ever. I feel like they've tried to be like, we should cheer for Sheamus several times over the past 5 years.
Yeah.
There have been several long, like 4 month, 6 month, 12 month periods where like, cheer for Sheamus, top face of SmackDown. Just, right. Nope, not buying
it. And even when they turned him heel after that, you're like, yeah, he's still love him because he's somehow made himself a bland heel, which almost never happens. Like 9 times out of 10, if a superstar isn't working as a face, you turn him heel and a lot of times they end up being pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Somehow Sheamus just defied those odds.
No. I think he was a better face. Shocker of shockers.
I mean, especially now with Cesaro.
And so now, for the first time, like it was last week or the week before, I was like, you know what? As the author of the Pain. Why I Hate Sheamus article,
right,
that got us that weirdly aggressive response.
Sup, Pat?
I will say, it's been a while.
Been a while.
I will say, Sheamus has pretty much won me over.
Yeah.
Like, association with Cesaro obviously helps. That entrance. Oh man, that entrance.
Yeah.
But, like, he's adapted well to this tag team lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing good in the ring. All the stuff where I'm like, I do see the talent in Sheamus. It's just buried under blandness.
Yeah.
That talent's starting to shine through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, all right, I've been won over. It took 4.5 years, but I've been won over. And then they turned him heel.
Yeah, sure. So
I'm not even against turning heel. I'm not right. Like, it's just weird that
they found a formula to finally get you there, and the moment they do, they throw the formula away almost, and just
like now boo him. I'm like, yeah, all right, I guess so.
Which is interesting because it's. Been a while since Cesaro's been a heel too, essentially since.
And I get like, you don't have a great number one heel tag team. That's your fault because you have Anderson and Gallows, who should be your top tier, mega dangerous.
And I think they were probably banking on they're banking on Revival, except Dash Wilder broke his jaw apparently, which I really liked Kofi's t-shirt that he made. Because Kofi got injured during the Revival whenever they came in.
Right.
And so Kofi, with a giant boot on his leg, has got a t-shirt that just says, Karma broke Dash's jaw.
Very nice.
Spelled correctly, not Karma with an H. She's not coming back. Sorry, guys.
But yeah, good match.
Yeah.
Nobody's been broken yet.
I mean,
Jeff has, apparently.
Yeah. I really felt like, after that, because that was a pretty vicious bro kick at the end.
Uh-huh.
After the match,
you thought that might be the breaking point.
And the way Matt Hardy was lying there, I was like, that could be the moment. And of course, it wasn't. But whatever.
I don't know. It is a weird balancing act because I do think that you're riding high on Hardy return right now.
Yeah.
And once that wanes, that's when you hit the broken button. But you don't want it to be so long that people don't care, and you don't want it to detract from right now.
Right.
That, they're doing good right now, they're doing great storylines, but all anybody will do is chant delete, and it's, not get invested in the match.
Right. Yeah, I'm okay with them playing up the nostalgia thing for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? just kind of like get what they can out of that before they move on to however they decide to finally roll that out. But yeah, the Hardys remain your tag team champions, and Cesaro and Sheamus, we'll see how that goes.
Yes, best of luck to them. Next up, Alexa defeats Bayley. For the championship. So we are one pay per view in, and my prediction chart is screwed at this point.
Yeah, I think I screwed up that one too.
Because I messed up that one.
See, here's where my exhaustion haze got the best of me. I don't remember how that match ended.
So it ended cleanly, and it ended cleanly with Bayley losing in her hometown.
Right.
Which is part of what the, like, shocker feel of it.
I guess, but you know how many times they've humiliated JR in Oklahoma.
Yeah, but this is Bayley.
The only person that ever gets what they want in their hometown is, like, CM Punk. That's it.
And The Rock.
Oh, yeah. Nah,
he had a
about
birthday
that.
Party.
He had a birthday party and a win at WrestleMania.
Yes, and a win at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Naomi won in her hometown last WrestleMania.
Fine. There you go.
So, very interesting thing. Interesting that, A, this makes Alexa Bliss the first person to win both the Raw and SmackDown Women's Championships. I think the first person to win a championship from both shows since the brand split. I'm definitely willing to be corrected on that because I'm not 100% sure, but I think she is.
I guess technically Kevin Owens, now that the U.S. Championship is on SmackDown, then he won it on SmackDown.
Yeah, but he won it on SmackDown on Tuesday, and she won on Sunday, so she'd still be the first one.
Fair enough. Fair enough. No, I think you're spot on with that.
So that's a fair amount of faith put in Alexa Bliss.
I guess she technically the Usos.
Maybe.
Because, I mean, granted, they weren't called the Raw Tag Team Championships when they won the Tag Team Championships, like, years ago.
Years and years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess technically.
Maybe.
If you look at the pedigree, Joel, if you look at the pedigree. But no, like, this is a interesting thing, and honestly, like, this is not something that any of us predicted whenever Alexa Bliss got called up on the draft. But I'm all for it. Like, I think she's one of the better female heels that they've got outside of Charlotte, and now Charlotte's apparently turning face.
Charlotte's a solid tweener. Like, I'm not willing to be like, Charlotte's a face. But interesting thing to come out of this, so Raw opened up with the women's segment and went on for, I think, over half an hour with the coronation segment and then the tag match.
Yeah, coordination break. Beginning of the tag match, break, tag match. Like, so it was a solid three segments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, well, safely over 30 minutes.
Yeah, although I still don't condone the random tag team matches, but, you know, whatever.
No, but I will say that's, I don't know, that is one of the things that really feels like improvement.
So many things, the fact that they're willing to put in that time, fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at the same time, if I'm not watching Raw live, that is... Putting a random tag team together is the best way to ensure that I'm going to be fast-forwarding.
100%.
Yeah.
Three heels versus three faces?
Yeah.
Like, oh, how did
women,
you...
Women, men, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Sorry, excuse me. I forgot the other gender. Cruiserweights. Men, women, and cruiserweights.
No, anything like, oh, how did you happen to split them up with all the faces and all the heels?
Right. Exactly.
What a crazy random... Nope.
The spirit of Teddy Long lives on.
Next up is the first part, I guess, but we'll go ahead and do the whole thing. Next up is the House of Horrors match.
Stupid. Like,
let me...
How, like, okay, see, here's the thing. Here's the big difference between what they did there and Final Deletion. Final Deletion wasn't showed in front of a live audience. Everything was taped, even like the episode of Impact that it aired on. No one was sitting in an arena watching Final Deletion as it was happening live. You know what I mean? They pre-taped this whole segment for the wrestling, and then you had the fans in the building watching it.
So,
and then you expect the fans to be into that? Come on.
Okay. I have talked a lot about throwing things at the wall and seeing if they stick.
Sure.
I'm a big proponent of that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in this day and age, I do think that wrestling is at a point where it needs to evolve. And I think it is, right now, it is at the cusp of being a lot more in the mainstream.
Sure.
A lot of that's Cena being a much more public figure, hosting Saturday Night Live, et cetera, et cetera. But through several factors, wrestling in general, WWE specifically, is starting to be seen a lot. So I do want them to try things.
Sure.
And I said this about the Final Deletion. I was like, that, you know what? Like it, yeah, or hate it or whatever, these guys are trying an off-the-wall, crazy, new, innovative way to try and tell a wrestling story.
Right.
And it's not perfect. Some stuff works, some stuff doesn't. But they are trying. They're taking risks to try and do, right, something that's not the same.
And they're at a place that gave them, you know, the creative freedom, right, to do it.
So in the spirit of that, I want to respect the attempt of the House of Horrors match.
Sure.
And in the spirit of that, I would like to offer some constructive criticism for maybe the next time you try something like this. One, you're totally correct. You made that entire crowd,
yeah, sit there and watch.
Watch the pay-per-view
it's
the way I watched.
It's almost like WrestleMania 2 when the crowd is like, you know, you get to the third crowd who's just watched the last 2 hours on a screen.
Yes.
Then you expect them to be a hot crowd for that last hour? Come on.
Yes. So, and just like WrestleMania 2, glad you tried it. Interesting idea.
Just never do it again. Kind of just like the Bray Wyatt Ring of Fire match.
So, a couple other things. We're not done yet.
Okay.
So, House of Horrors, Matt, you made that up. So, you get to make up the rules.
Sure, fine.
But I want to know what the rules are. Because you say this happens, and I need to go, ooh, or ah. Whatever, like, right. I need to have a reaction to that. So, first of all, I should know the rules before the day of the match.
Yes. Not, like, literally moments before the match. Like, oh, they have to get to the ring.
Right.
And then if the other one person gets to the ring and they do a 10 count, I guess, before the other person shows up, then I guess that means that person,
yeah,
lost.
So, your rules need to be consistent. So basically you've set up like, oh.
I feel like that's asking a lot of WWE to be consistent with their own rules. Come on.
Well, it sets it up and I'm like these are the rules. And you're like, oh, so basically, right, it's a no count out match, but you still have to pin in the ring. It's a no count out match. Just starts way far away.
Right.
But then it's like, no, but count out still work. Okay. So what? And then I get where you're going with it, but right, like, just another.
They should have had
another 90 seconds trying to fine tune,
sure,
and tweak those rules.
And just be like, a count of 10 begins when one superstar enters the ring.
Yeah.
And if the other person can't answer that count of 10 to the ring or whatever, however you want to word it, then that's forfeiture.
And then addressing the actual House of Horrors match.
Yeah.
The actual stuff that happened in the...
That we're supposed to believe was happening live.
Yes.
Even though we had camera cuts, After Effects, lighting.
I am... So, getting into the whole, like, hey, Vince, said Ted Turner, I'm in the wrestling business. Vince goes, well, I'm in the entertainment business. We're in the, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
And Vince wants to make movies.
Sure.
And so, like, I can watch this and be like, oh, Vince is trying to make a movie. I see that. So I can buy that Bray Wyatt has superpowers. I've bought that Kane and Undertaker had superpowers for 20 years. I can buy that Bray Wyatt has some superpowers. I can buy that was a ghost driving that tractor.
No, that was Cena.
Because you couldn't see him?
Yeah, it was a Cena,
yeah,
cameo.
I saw that.
I have to believe.
I can believe that when the lights turn red, that actually means something ominous and not,
right,
red lights.
And we have to believe that whenever, you know, Randy walks into a room, he perfectly lines up so where, like, you know, the shadows mask everything except for his eyes.
Yeah.
And he just lands in that spot perfectly every time.
And like, And so stuff like the cuts that were happening in a supposedly live thing. Okay, but Bray Wyatt interrupts the feed of wrestling a lot just on the live show.
Sure.
So I can suck it up and I can get behind. Okay, there's that. Here is the thing. So I'm watching this. I'm like, all right, I can. It is varying degrees of I'm actually enjoying this to I can accept that. Stuff happening in between there. All right, we're going through it. All right, I get the back and forth. And here is honestly what broke it for me.
Okay.
So this is a house of horrors.
Yes.
It's a haunted house.
Yes.
Here are some creepy rooms. Here's the doll creepy room. Here's the rocking chair that's moving by itself creepy room. Like several creepy rooms. And then the fight goes into the kitchen.
That didn't have any sort of lighting or any special lighting. Or anything, decor or anything like that. It literally was a kitchen.
There were some dirty dishes in the sink.
Ooh, spooky.
The stove was like, okay, was an electric stove with a digital clock on it.
Spooky.
Which, like, this is an old backwater bike. Like, there should be a... The wood-burning stove in that kitchen.
Spooky digital age. Ooh.
So it looks like the House of Horrors with the kitchen in case the demon gets hungry and needs a snack halfway through.
Also, I'm assuming we're supposed to believe that this house belongs to Bray Wyatt.
Yes.
So we know he lives in San Jose? Because that doesn't look like San Jose. It looked like you're just typical backwood. I've never been to San Jose.
I will accept that it was somewhere in the Bayou area because that's where Bray Wyatt's from.
Mm-hmm.
That way it can be dark.
And the limo was a teleportation device.
Bray Wyatt has superpowers. However, when he was driving away, I gotta say he's got the whole world in his hands. Has more than one verse because we hung on him the whole time. He sang the whole verse. And then started the song over.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't expect him to go into a second verse. You know, you don't want to assume fans know that stuff. Also, what a limo driver! Like the guy that you bring in doesn't come back, except another guy comes in and he looks like Bray Wyatt, and he's like, "We're good here. Go ahead and drive."
I don't know. I guess that was like. That was per WWE's instructions. He's, you know, just there to get paid.
Also, get with the times. Just have an Uber driver.
So
just have Bray, like, at the end of it, stand outside of the house, pulls out a phone, and just use, you know, camera over the shoulder, just request Uber.
Again, like, while this was a bad match, this wasn't a irredeemable match. I'm interested. I'm willing to, like, all right, what do you have in the way of pre-record the match and then show it to me?
Yeah.
I'm interested in the, you know what? The creepy superpowered wrestler, undead zombie looking thing has been a staple of wrestling for forever.
Sure.
How do we do that in, you know, today?
Yeah.
So I'm interested in, and I'm willing to work with you as an audience member on what you're doing that. So I genuinely hope that some of this will be taken to heart. Things like digital clocks aren't scary.
Or just the kitchen in general.
Yes. The kitchen, like, just be aware of some ambiance there, guys.
And man, they're really trying to put over that fridge.
Yes.
When they cut back to the commentary too. Like, dear God, you would have thought that refrigerator was covered in knives.
So I don't necessarily want the concept of let's try something new to go away, but take this and learn from it.
I'm going to be so terrified when I go home and I walk in my kitchen.
Please, please learn from it. Next up, Seth Rollins defeats Samoa Joe, further destroying my bracket.
Yeah.
I'm
sitting here trying to think of something to say about that. I really don't have anything.
I mean... Last week,
mm-hmm.
we talked about it and basically came to the conclusion that Samoa Joe had to win because if he didn't, it would be stupid for the following 8 reasons. So go back and listen to last week's, and those 8 reasons are the reasons that this was stupid. It's just like, and to top it off.
But you know what? Just one saving grace.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't find a kitchen.
No. But this is almost worse. Because this is frustrating. Sorry. To top it off. So Seth Rollins wins. He's defeated Samojo. Mm-hmm. And then comes out on Raw next week. The segment is billed as Seth Rollins is coming out to talk about what's next for him.
Yeah.
Because he comes out because Samoa Joe has been so thoroughly defeated that there's just nothing left of him.
Apparently so, yeah.
He can't come out and be angry. He can't, like, he doesn't come out and, you know, attack him. He doesn't come out and be like, you got lucky, you know, one more try, my son, the sun was in my eyes, or anything to, like, continue any semblance of Samoa Joe is a dangerous dude.
Sure, yeah.
We haven't heard from him.
No. And also, can we talk about how stupid that segment was on Raw? Seth Rollins comes out and is like, I want the Beast. I would be next in line. Finn Balor comes out and is like, I want the Beast. I should be next. I'm in line. I didn't get my chance. Whenever I got injured, no one beat me. Blah, 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 blah. Miz comes out and is like, if anyone deserves a spot, it's me. Dean Ambrose comes out and he's like, Intercontinental Championship, you guys? And they're like, yes, we all want that now.
I appreciate an honest attempt to try and build up the prestige of the Intercontinental Championship.
Yes, but it just makes them look like they all have a short attention span.
I appreciate that Dean Ambrose, as the champion, that's part of his job.
Right.
I appreciate him, and I appreciate him being willing to, and / being allowed to say, Brock is a crappy champion because
sure. He
takes the belt and goes home. But we are talking about the IC title versus what's supposed to be your main title.
Yeah.
The title you invented to have a main title.
But if that's...
Which is like, Seth Rollins comes out and says, it's my turn to play with the giant $500 Death Star Lego.
Right.
And then Finn comes out and says, my turn. And then Miz comes out and says, my turn. And Dean comes out and says, Mega Blocks, you guys?
But if the Legos aren't even available, why even bring it up? You know what I mean?
No, I understand.
Because again, it just like it comes off as they all have really short attention span because here comes Dean Ambrose waving something shiny in front of them and like, ooh, I want that. Like that literally is how that segment went.
No, it was dumbish.
It was dumbish.
and again, it's the thing where you're like, all right, so. And here's what's almost
the thing,
the most frustrating about it. Okay. This here's almost the thing.
Okay.
Because it was obvious, like the build up, you're like, oh, okay, so they are going to fight, you know, for this championship. It's clearly going to be Miz. He's going to go, and that's going to be the feud for the Intercontinental. And then these two guys will have a number one contendership match because somebody's going to be facing Brock pretty soon in about 2 months. And so you're like, oh, I get it. I can immediately see the blocks fall into place. And so you're like, oh, so this is to make the main event worth something.
Right.
Which I have complained about since episode friggin' like 2.
Sure.
Of this podcast is the biggest issue with Raw and SmackDown is that there is no stakes behind the matches other than the glory of winning. There's no scoreboard, basically.
Right.
And number one contendership matches are a great solution to that. We're like, oh, yeah. These guys are fighting for something. They're fighting for a chance to do something. And so I am very happy on one hand that,
yeah. Oh,
they were able to fill in a main event for Raw this week where it was for something.
Yeah, and it's for the mid-card belt to kind of elevate that.
But, yeah, it came about through this weird side segment where they're already...
Because we already know that we're not going to see Brock until July.
Right.
Because they've announced that pay-per-view.
And so they are backpacking off of the build-up for the Seth and Finn Balor number one contendership by being like, but here's also this number one contendership match.
So, yeah. So these guys are going to go off at the next month's pay-per-view, which is June.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming. And so then by that point, they could start having battles between Seth and Finn to fill out the time to lead up to the amazing pay-per-view announced for July for Raw.
Have we talked about this?
No, because it happened the day after we recorded. So they named a pay-per-view Great Balls of Fire.
Yes, they did.
You want to talk about WWE just throwing stuff at the wall and us commending them for that, but never do it again? They haven't even done the pay-per-view, but we're like, nah, never do this again.
This is not throwing things at the wall.
This is Vince not knowing how to name things anymore, I guess. I don't know.
Well, okay, so first of all, how do you even do this without Kane? How do you not have Kane be a prominent figure of the Great Balls of Fire match?
I don't have a good answer for you, but they'll find a way.
Also,
I think he's on SmackDown.
Yeah, like it has to open up with fire explosions in place of fireworks, right? Like firework, fireball explosion, basically as if Kane was coming out.
Joel, you're making too much sense for a pay-per-view called Great Balls of Fire.
But that fireball
in 2017.
The fireball explosion is going to come out, and then I promise you, Michael Cole will say, "Goodness gracious."
Yeah, I know. I know. The name of this pay-per-view has Vince McMahon written all over it. In my eyes. Because he's probably the only person that thought this was a good idea and no one wanted to tell him no. That's the only way in my mind that this could have happened.
Okay. So this is a four-word pay-per-view. When we're used to Backlash, Payback, Roadblock.
I mean, Hell in a Cell's four, but two of those words is in.
So there's a handful that are four.
Yeah.
They are Hell in a Cell, Money in the Bank.
Mm-hmm.
But these are all gimmick pay-per-views named after a specific type of match that has already won over the crowd at other pay-per-views before getting its own pay-per-view. This is Great Balls of Fire, to our knowledge, is not a gimmick pay-per-view. It falls under, you know, the generic things go fast, things go hard, street words kind of pay-per-view.
In 1950, yes.
So,
for Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah.
It's just... Like I said, the only way that I can imagine this going down is Vince thought it was a great idea and no one had the flamey balls to tell him no. Because and if that's the case, this is the biggest, most obvious reason or the most obvious example.
Most apparent.
That too. Of Vince just being out of touch.
Yeah.
With today's society or just not even
the youth
what's hip,
of today.
Just out of touch with everything going on right now.
So
it's the biggest sign that maybe he needs to hang it up.
Which
is not going to happen because it's his company and he's like, still the chairman, so it's not going
to
happen.
Great Balls of Fire is going to be mocked for quite a while. Just brace yourselves, guys.
As it should be.
The final match of the pay-per-view was Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns.
Yep. Which, according to the commentators, was the most brutal, deadly, battle-rific battle of ever times.
So, I heard some good things about this match afterwards.
Yeah.
Some fairly positive reviews.
I mean, I also thought it was a good match. But, man, they really tried to, like, blow smoke up its butt the next day.
Well, the thing is, watching it, I realized I'm not enjoying this match.
Yeah.
Because I'm scared that Roman will win.
Yeah.
I can't enjoy a match that he's in right now if I don't think he should win.
Because
I'm scared that he will.
Did you feel the same way with their match at Fastlane? Do you remember?
kind of, but it wasn't like I knew he was going to win. It felt more like a dark inevitability at that one. This one had so much of like, oh, Roman is injured going into the match. It had all the setup of the classic Super Cena underdog overcoming the odds thing, yeah, just with Roman in the place.
Yeah.
And watching it, and like there's no reason logically that Roman should win this match.
Yeah.
The storyline is built,
but that's never stopped them in the past.
No, and that's the thing. That's the thing is I couldn't enjoy the match. I was stressed almost about like, and now Roman's gonna win. And I don't know.
Did you have that same feeling at WrestleMania?
No, I because that wasn't a stress thing. That was just a
inevitability.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't feel that going away anytime soon.
I feel like this is some sort of weird therapy session.
Well, I do think that Roman is a good wrestler. We've all said that,
right?
Multiple times. But I don't know the last match of his I've enjoyed, or I've hoped he won. He would win, I guess.
Hope that he won. It's been a very, very long time that he's been in a match, but I hope that he won.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not since the Monster Push. I don't think he's won a match that I've wanted him to win since he came back from that weird... since he won Superstar of the Year that one time where he had been out for most of that year, or or an attack team when he was healthy. So that's what, like 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So... the only match I felt like I really wanted him to win was the Royal Rumble where Batista won. That was back when he was still with the Shield.
Yeah.
But he broke Kane's record.
And just thinking back on it, and like there is like, all right, so, but there's going to be an argument of, oh, but you're having an emotional reaction. Because I'm having a very emotional reaction to this match, and I'll be the first to admit that. But it's not an emotion I'm enjoying having, because it is taking away from my enjoyment of the match.
Right.
Of what I've been told is apparently a very good match.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and I was able to intellectually see things like, oh, yeah, Roman is doing good in this match. He's having some good character development.
Right.
Braun is looking incredible in this match. Man, he has done so much that I never thought possible with this character. I'm continually impressed by that. But that all roads lead back to, I'm very impressed, and I hate that this is all going to feed the Roman is an underdog machine that I'm stressed out about again.
Yeah, because we went through it with Cena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where he's always the underdog. And, man, they love handing Roman Reigns some blood packets.
Yeah.
And they overdo it.
Well, and that might be it.
To play up the sympathy card?
The underdog thing.
Yeah.
That might have been the thing that triggered that so much, that where it wasn't there with Undertaker and stuff.
Yeah.
Because Undertaker, he was going on even footing. And was a ceremonial retirement match. And just like... and it was the thing where, like, I wish this was Cena, but okay.
Yeah.
But no, this match at Payback was stressful.
Yeah.
How
did you feel about the fans, when Strowman was being relentless and just pounding Roman into the ground with the fans chanting, "Thank you, Strowman"?
I will say that if you're going to continue to do the, like, oh, these fans are crazy route, not a bad idea to make sure Roman fights people whose names rhyme with his, because it's really easy to be like, hey,
they're saying,
listen
to
that crowd, thank you, Roman.
Right.
And Strowman sucks. Yes, we agree with you, crowd. Buy a t-shirt.
Yes. So we're to believe that the people of San Jose was just having fun, Michael.
Yeah, so...
it's a phenomenon at WrestleMania, and yet it happens everywhere else.
I would encourage crowds, I guess, to continue to be belligerent about this.
But then they're just going to find a way. They'll just find a way to kind of retcon this as, oh, this is the reaction that we wanted.
Unless you're just giving Roman more odds to overcome. Because I don't want...
That's all. They're just going to continue their plan. They're going to continue it no matter what. Until he comes out and it's crickets,
mm-hmm.
then they're just going to keep going.
Well, and it's also... Okay, so... You look at the organization of this card.
Mm-hmm.
You have what is your main title match, which is probably the women's match. It's a top-tier belt for the women's division in the middle of the card. The biggest male superstar belt is your United States Championship, which opens the show. Yeah. Your WWE champion is on the show, but he fights in the middle.
And doesn't have the belt.
And yeah, but I like
didn't at that point.
And also the biggest, promo thing was the House of Horrors match. What is this going to be? In the middle of the show, and you close the show out with Roman, who has nothing more than a grudge match.
Yeah.
For a
feud that took 2 months of a break because Undertaker.
So yeah, so that might add to the part of like that. This is Underdog Super Cena all over again.
And the whole build to this was weird with the shakeup and mm-hmm. everything else kind of, in the path of this. Payback was just a weird situation.
Yeah.
From beginning to end, almost.
Yeah, so the next thing they've announced, the next thing is Backlash. It'll be a SmackDown exclusive.
Yep.
Nakamura will be fighting somebody.
I'm assuming Ziggler. Yeah. Looks like it'll be KO versus AJ Styles. For the US belt.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we got Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship.
Yes.
It's not clear what they're going to do with the women's division. It looks like it might be just like a big group tag team.
Maybe. I will say I really enjoyed that Becky segment this week on SmackDown.
Oh, where they teased her.
The tease of it?
Teased her turning heel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I enjoyed it too, yeah.
So
I'm glad that she did the fake out of the turn on James Ellsworth.
I will say, like,
I'm going to need to see an intergender match between those two at some point.
As we all are on our smarky, grumpy internet personas, you always kind of like, oh, there should be more heels. Everybody should be a heel. Heels are awesome. Yeah. Becky's a fae. Like, Becky is a textbook how to do a good face character.
Which is funny because she was really good as a heel in NXT,
mm-hmm.
you know? But the way her character has been presented on the main roster.
As good as, or maybe better than Bayley for me. As far as like the clean cut white meat heel.
Yeah.
Like she is doing it well.
Yeah.
Anything else from this week?
No, I believe that's it.
All right. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at CR Attire, where we live tweet all Mondays and appropriate Sundays.
Yep. And if you have any questions you want to send our way, anything you want us to bring up on the show, send that over to our email. That's classroomringattire@gmail.com.
We are also on iTunes. Easy way to follow the podcast. You get a new episode every single week. Maybe write us a review or give us a rating of
5 stars.
If you do that, that will help out the podcast a great deal.
And if you're listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to hear from you.
We're also on Facebook. Easy way to follow Chris. Easy way to follow myself. See what other kind of things we're working on. Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.